What we found is that in remote viewing or in psychic functioning, people very rarely have the ability to say, I see the number is changing from a 6.5 to a 675. If somebody tells you they have that kind of perception, it just doesn't sound like a psychic perception. What we had to find is a way to encode or associate changes in the silver market with something that a person could describe like an object. And a simple example would be, we could decide if silver is going to go up, we'll show you a soda bottle. If silver is going to go down, we'll show you a pancake. And of course, I wouldn't tell you in advance what I'm going to show you. So I say, here we are, we're going to make an investment in silver. And would you tell us, please, the object we will show you next Monday? And that object will be based on what silver does, not on what you say. And you close your eyes and say, I see something flat and kind of squishy, and I pick it up in my hand and it feels like a flat piece of paper. Then I would go to my partner and say, I've got this flat description, what are your objects? He says, well, if silver goes up, I have a soda bottle. If it goes down, we've got a pancake. And this guy's flat, squishy object sounds like a pancake. Let's sell silver. And that's the kind of associative process that we used. We used four objects because we wanted to know whether silver would go up a quarter or up more than a quarter, down a quarter or down more than a quarter. So my partner choosing objects would have to choose four objects different from each other on a Thursday. And the object that Keith would be shown the following Monday would again be determined by the market. And in 9 consecutive trials, he always described the right object.
You know, that must bring some terror to the heart of a silver trader to know that you guys are being extremely successful working with soda pop bottles and pancakes, and doing it successfully and very scientifically. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. With me is Dr. Russell Targ, Dr. Judith Orloff. We're talking about psychic functioning. And maybe you have some questions. Maybe you've had some things happen to you. Some psychic functioning that you may not have wanted to talk about. Well, you certainly have the people to talk to tonight, and I invite you to call. All right, hello, you're on.
This is Ann.
Hello, Ann.
Hello, Bill. I enjoy your program very much.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to talk to Dr. Targ about some dreams that I have had that has happened exactly like I have dreamed them. May I?
You certainly may.
For one, I was working with an electronics engineer. He put everything together electronically, and then we had to figure out how to get it in a little small component. We could not work it out at all. I went home and dreamed about it. I went to the shop very early the next morning, went into the machine shop, which I never worked in, but I put this component together exactly like I saw it in my dream. Rather crude, but I just wanted to see if it would work. The electronic engineer came in and he said, well, what a great idea. How did you ever think of that? He did not believe that I had done it in my sleep. But I worked there 8 years afterwards, and the only thing we did was to iron out the bugs after I got my idea across. They were still using the same thing when I left there.
Well, that's thrilling. Have you had other experiences like that?
Well,
that sounds like the kind of thing you ought to encourage in yourself and develop.
May I tell you just very quickly of one more? I was very anxious to get in touch with a relative. This was several years ago. I had no idea where they were, but I dreamed one night I addressed an envelope to a different party, a little town in Phoenix. I had no idea where, what address, but I wrote on an envelope. I'll just use, for instance, I said, on the corner of South Boulevard and West Street. You understand what I mean?
Yes.
I sent the letter, and very shortly, I received an answer to my letter. The party says, you did address the envelope wrong, but I received it. And the party is, I was interested in, you write so and so and so. I wrote to them and got in touch with them. Now, I had so many things during a period of my life, one after another that was happening, a death in my family, although I did not know which member it was going to be, I dreamed it. And I just wonder, is there any way that I could study that line and maybe go back to having the same type of dreams?
Well, the way you can study it, my favorite book dealing with the whole question is a book by Jung called Dreams, Memories, and Reflections, if I have those in the right order. There are two things. First of all, Jung was a genius with regard to dreams and his interpretation of them. Also, what you'll find is that once you begin to get very interested in dreams, your whole dream life will improve. And what people find is when they begin to get very interested in dreams, they can hardly wait to go to bed.
That's why I'd like to be able to do it again.
Well, the way to do it, I have two things for you to do. One is to read this terrific book by Carl Jung, Dreams, Memories, and Reflections. And the other is to go to bed with the intention of having dreams. And then when you wake up in the morning, write yourself a note about what you dreamed about.
Mm-hmm.
And the outcome of that will definitely be that you will have more dreams. And that will give you the raw material to begin to see which ones are precognitive.
I feel that I might have the ability to do so because it was happening to me over a period of several years that in the next day or two would happen exactly as I dreamed it. I feel like that the ability is there if I can just bring it forward.
Well, there's two good ideas for you to work on it, Ann.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
I'll sure do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call and sharing that with us.
Thank
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Door isn't working, so you just have to identify yourself and go.
My name is Joan.
Hi, Joan.
Hi. I'd like to ask, what is grounding and how do you accomplish it for self-protection?
All right.
Mm-hmm. Grounding is something very important that you do need for self-protection. And what that is a connection to practical things, everyday things. It's a connection to being in the world, to functioning here in a way that makes sense. When people get into meditation and start exploring psychic experiences, they start to get very seduced by the spiritual realms and tend to lose their sense of grounding, meaning the sense of how they are in the world. And grounding is essentially that, how you function in the world, how you take care of business in the world, and how you relate to the earth, and just very practical things.
Oh.
It is quite easy, I think, if you all at once are involved in psychic experiences, whether you wanted them or not, to take on a sort of an etheric air about yourself, in a way.
Well, sometimes people are misinformed or unenlightened, and they may be thinking down wrong paths, and it's from those kind of people that I would like to protect myself.
Yes, that is called shielding. Are you familiar with that at all?
No, I never heard of it before.
It's a way to protect yourself from energies that you do not want close to you.
Yes.
So that you're not vulnerable all the time to the many energies that are out there in the world.
That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah. Well, one way to do that is through imagery. And you can image a shield around yourself. A lot of people like to use light or white light surrounding you as if you were in an egg. And to really protect yourself within this white light and not allow other people's energies to get close to you unless you choose.
Judith, can you hold on? And you want to hold on too, hon? We're going to have to take a break for news here. I do want to talk more about shielding and grounding, and we'll just, if you will stay
Shall
with
I
us,
hold on the telephone or on the
Please
radio?
Do, if you will, and we'll continue
I'll
the
hold.
Conversation.
Thank you. This is very interesting.
You have Open Mind tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me, Russell Targ and Judith Orloff. Physical worlds we live in and other dimensions, in fact. And you kind of stand in the middle. And in fact, you stand on both sides of this physical world and a spiritual world or some other kind of world. And your mind is just racing across it, here and yither and then. We heard from Anne a little bit ago, who can, with her mind, solve problems. Other people get problems because of it, because they don't understand it. Now, we were in the process of talking about shielding and grounding. Are you with us now? Hello? Well, I have to punch her back in. Are you with us?
Yes.
Yeah, what was your name again, huh?
Joan.
Okay. We had gotten one idea about how to shield yourself, and you were worried about that, the negative energy that comes from other people.
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to continue with that, Judith?
Another very important thing to do if you're around somebody that you think is toxic to you is to get physically away from them in terms of getting out of their energy field, because an energy field can protrude just a certain amount. And if you're in close juxtaposition next to them, you'll feel it more. So the first very practical thing is just to remove yourself from that person physically. The second thing is to use the example of light and bring it around your body and have yourself enclosed in it totally so that it can protect you. And oftentimes, if you do want to invoke a prayer, that can help also.
Oh, I'm so very grateful to you.
Oh, well, you're very welcome.
So very, very grateful.
Do those things help, Joan?
Yes. Oh,
Are you able to do that imagery in your mind? Do you think you can do that?
As far as I know, I imagine I can. I imagine.
I think Russell has some other ideas for you if you want to hang on there, Joan.
Oh, thank you. Uh-huh.
Well, what I saw in hearing Judith's description is a program that certainly makes good psychological sense and corresponds to Judith's experience in practicing psychiatry. Now, I don't pretend to practice psychiatry. I'm a physicist. And in dealing with people in the course of my work in psychic research, I couldn't counsel them about the kind of mental images to project to help them if they feel they're under psychic attack. I would be concerned, first of all, in an area that I have complete agreement with, that if you feel that somebody is wishing you ill, it's first of all essential to determine who that person is and separate yourself in a clear way from that person.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to mental activities, it's very important to have yourself in good physical shape. That is, you shouldn't be run down or fatigued. In addition to meditation or images, I would suggest you get some sort of physical activity, physical fitness program, so that you can feel good about your body, that you have vitality, stamina, and physical energy, so that not only can you mentally deal with the person, but you feel as though you are a strong person yourself.
Do we have to jog?
You don't have to jog, but I think you have to do something. Jogging's not bad. Walking fast or over distances is good. Going bowling would be something that you could do that I like to do. Some kind of physical activity, so that if you feel that your problem comes from the psychic sphere, take some part of your day to step outside the psychic sphere and get in touch with your body. Running along the ocean would probably be on top of my favorite things to do, to just get your arms and legs moving, breathe the fresh air of the ocean, and do something totally separated from the closed-in psychic attack, what am I going to do atmosphere, but just get out in the open and do something physical on a regular basis.
Okay, Joan, you got just an awful lot of input there. Does that help you?
I sure did get a lot of input, and I know it's going to be helpful, and I'm so grateful I don't know how to tell you.
All right, check back with us and let me know what happened, would you?
I surely will.
Okay,
thank you,
Joan,
so much.
Thank you very much for being with us tonight on Open Mind. And you're on. Who do we have here?
Linda.
Hi, Linda.
Hi. I've been listening to you for 3 years, and I finally decided to call.
Well, Linda, I'm glad you did.
Well, what I wanted to talk about was through my recording and research and writing down, I've noticed that about 98% of my dreams have come true. And it's really made me curious. I can't understand it, but does this mean that the future is inevitable? And anything that will happen will already happen, or what?
You're talking about predestination, as it were?
Mm-hmm.
No, we think the future is not inevitable, but future events can cause you to have an experience at an earlier time. For example, if you have a dream about snowballs rolling down Sunset Boulevard and you wake up in the morning and tell somebody, I had this amazing dream about snowballs on Sunset Boulevard, that's a pretty unlikely thing to happen in September.
Mm-hmm.
And then next afternoon, you see snowballs on Sunset Boulevard. You say, how do we deal with this?
Mm-hmm.
And in our experience, what we would say is that Sunday's snowballs were the cause of Saturday night's dream about snowballs. That is, the future event was the cause of your having an experience at an earlier time.
Mm-hmm.
So to put it in its worst form is to say that the future is causing the past. Now, it's important to realize that the future can't change the past. That is, nothing in the future can cause an event that has already happened to not happen. That'd be a logical contradiction. No, you cannot go into your future and kill your grandmother and prevent your being born.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, a precognitive dream or a precognition is not a prophecy of an unavoidable, inevitable event.
Mm-hmm.
It's a forecast. For example, if I go to the doctor and say, how am I? And he said, bad news, you're going to have an appendicitis and die. I can say, that's a very interesting forecast, but I don't wish to have that experience. I think I'll go to the hospital and have my appendix removed.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make his forecast wrong, because he totally described the present situation. However, once I have that situation, it's a whole new ballgame, because the universe is now different than it was at the time he made his forecast, because his forecast is in it. So a person can make a forecast, and as long as he keeps it to himself and is an experienced forecaster, it's quite likely to occur. On the other hand, if you are in a position to make use of that information yourself, then you can indeed alter the future, because once you have the information, it's available for you to alter.
So you're saying that some things in the past, in the future will happen, but others won't?
Depending on whether or not they're available for you to change as a result of having the information.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if I look into the future and I say, we're going to meet for lunch tomorrow. I know you couldn't decide whether or not to meet me, but I've looked into my future and I see us sitting there in a booth with tables and chairs and so forth, and that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have that information, you can say, nuts to you, I don't want to allow myself to be governed by your imagination. Just because of what you told me, I'm going to do something entirely different. And you're free to do that because you have the information and are free to act on it.
Yes, I feel that. I feel that just from a feeling. I feel that's how it is because, what I basically feel is that, say I dream of something, but if something in reality that I do upsets what will happen, it'll totally change what will happen, and therefore what I dreamt of won't happen because I changed it accidentally.
I know that sounds like a paradox, but what you said is correct. If you dream about being in an airplane crash, you can perfectly well not get on that airplane. It may crash anyway, but you don't have to experience the crash if you don't wish to.
Some people think that your fate is inevitable and you have to have it, but I don't believe that at all, really. Because as one person would say, if a person was breaking into your house, it was your time because God wants you. And I'd say, personally, you can stay there and I'll go out the window, you know?
That would be my choice as well.
I feel that way. There are a lot of people say, when your time's up, your time's up, no matter what.
Yeah.
And I don't know, my wife believes that, in fact. She and I differ on that also.
Yeah, I'll say, well, you can just leave. I'll leave out the window. I'm not going to, you know, killed or anything like that.
Linda, thank you very much for the question tonight.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and with me is Dr. Russell Targ, Dr. Judith Orloff. We're talking about, with me, the author of The Mind Race, and also Dr. Judith Orloff of the Spiritual Emergency Network. What is this network? Why would I want to call it?
The Spiritual Emergency Network deals with spiritual emergencies, and these are situations that in the past have been defined as psychotic episodes. Spiritual emergencies are of a number of different kinds. We touched on it initially in the program. These are when unwanted kinds of psychic experiences come in and invade the consciousness so that the person does not feel in control of them, and they could also consist of energetic experiences of the Kundalini type with very bizarre sensations in the body, pain sensations, blockage sensations, loss of balance, loss of orientation to the world, confusion, just a lack of grounding can occur. And this happens to many, many, many people. And typically what happens is they'll be seen by a psychiatrist or an emergency clinic and be diagnosed as having a psychotic episode and or a schizophrenic type episode and be hospitalized, started on certain types of medications like neuroleptics, for instance, Thorazine, Stelazine, and be very heavily medicated so that they no longer have these types of experiences. And the experiences themselves are never really looked into or understood. They're just suppressed. And what the Spiritual Emergency Network does is try to look at these types of experiences from a different vantage point and try to use them in a very positive way to help in the development of the person who is experiencing them, and to use them to understand them and to support the person through these experiences.
Well, you're a practicing psychiatrist here in Los Angeles, right?
Yes, I have a private practice in Century City, plus I'm involved with the Spiritual Emergency Network.
The other people that are involved with it, are they as credentialed as you to handle these kind of cases?
Yes, there are some psychiatrists, there are some psychologists. The center actually is up in Monterey,
mm-hmm.
and it's the psychologists who deal with transpersonal psychology.
Is there a number or to reach it? If someone is having this experience or listening to us here tonight and say, hey, maybe they have the answer for me, how do they reach you? How do they contact you?
Well, they could contact me directly in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And my number is 277-7007. The center is in Monterey. It's the California Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. I do not have that number on me.
But information in Monterey would have it.
Yeah, information has it.
Okay. So there is help out there for you.
Yes, there is help. And I really encourage people to seek the kind of help that can be useful to them and really view these experiences as a positive, productive one rather than a destructive one. So I think typically psychiatry does look at these experiences as destructive and does not leave room for a real opening to occur with them, a real growth experience.
Well, it's interesting to note that there are those that are of your profession that are understanding that the psychic phenomenon is a part of life rather than something that you just kind of brush over because nobody seems to understand it. We're now dealing with psychic problems, which is it's very encouraging to see that that's happening within the medical community.
That's just beginning to happen. I would say the bulk of the medical community does not feel that way, and most psychiatrists would view psychic experience as being pathological.
Are you going to prove them wrong?
Well, I certainly hope so, because it's being proven that people who are very, very grounded and established professional people have psychic experiences and learn to integrate these into their lives in a very positive way and learn how to really integrate intuition and the psychic kind of seeing in all aspects of life.
It can be a great tool and bonus.
I think so. As research in psychic phenomena and remote viewing, which is, of course, a kind of psychic functioning, as these data are reported in the world's most prestigious magazines and scientific journals, like the Institute, like Proceedings of the Institute of Radio Engineers and British magazine Nature and the American Academy of Sciences, as the scientific community becomes increasingly aware and interested in psychic functioning, it's increasingly safe for a person to have these kind of experiences, and they're considered an ordinary part of human functioning rather than an instance of mental illness.
Enlightening.
Yeah, for example, I use a lot of my psychic abilities in my work and in my life, and it has only added to my total experience in both of those things. It has just added so much.
So it's a tool that a lot of people are scared of, when actually it can be extremely helpful in all facets of life, in all levels of life.
Absolutely, and it's natural, and most everyone can learn how to do it. And the whole point is to take the fear element out of it and to see it as a natural, normal type of functioning and to integrate it in a positive way into our lives.
I certainly want to commend you for the work that you're doing in bringing that information to the people. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and we'll be psychic functioning with you in just a moment. Open Mind so far. The book is fascinating. You have in the palm of your hand a device that may help all of us with our psychic abilities.
Well, the device we're working on, we call the Mind Racer, and is something developed for a contract that we had with NASA, National Aeronautics and Space Administration. There was a lot of evidence that people can develop their psychic abilities and get better as they go along with practice. And we made a ESP game where you have a box that chooses one of four lights that it has in its own little interior, and you have one of four buttons to push, which you use your intuition to choose so that you press a button corresponding to the light the machine has chosen. The machine has chosen red, you think, you press the red button. If that's correct, a bell will ring and the red light will come on. If it's not correct, a different light comes on. But the important thing about this very simple game is that it allows you to learn what it feels like at those times when you're successfully using your psychic abilities. You can play. Nobody is giving you a score. Nobody's marking you right or wrong. And when you don't have that special feeling, you can pass. And what you want to find out is that after 25 trials, how many correct answers you've gotten. You would expect 6 out of 25, and people learn to get 8 or 10 or 12 with practice. The purpose of this device was not to show that ESP exists, but rather to show that feedback and reinforcement and practice allow people to improve their ability. And what we find is that actually occurs. People playing with this game learn to get in touch with what it feels like to function psychically. This is a much more analytical task than the kind of remote viewing that we have done over the past decade. In the remote viewing work, we ask a person simply to describe their feelings or their mental pictures with regard to some hidden object or some distant place. And we tell them to just describe what it feels like, don't make any choices, but simply describe their mental pictures. And we help them to separate out their analytical guesses, separate out what they think it might be, what they've recently experienced, or the thing sitting in front of them. They want to learn to clear their mind of other distractions and other images and just describe the surprising pictures that come to them. With the remote viewing, we have found that people also improve with practice. The great strength of this ability, as compared with, for example, the card guessing that Ryan had done at Duke University in the 30s and 40s, is that the inevitable result of the card guessing experiments that Ryan did was that people would get worse in the laboratory. Ryan's contribution is that he found an experiment that could show psychic functioning. The people could guess cards, the square, star, circle, waves, and so forth. People could guess cards significantly more accurately than you would think by chance. The great problem with his work is that they inevitably declined. So the decline effect turned out to be the most robust effect that he saw. It's as though, through dint of hard work in the laboratory, Ryan found a way to extinguish psychic phenomena with great reliability. And that, of course, was not what he was trying to do. The difference between the card guessing and remote viewing of natural targets is that with remote viewing, a person is describing non-analytically. They're describing their feelings and their experiences with regard to hidden objects or distant places. And that corresponds to what people are actually able to do, and they get better at it rather than worse. So probably the principal contribution of the decade of work that we did at SRI is that we described a protocol, an experimental procedure that people can use and incorporate into their lives to learn to do psychic functioning. And our Mind Racer game is another kind of feedback device that lets people get in touch with that part of themselves that's psychic.
And that little device will help. Did NASA use the device, or was it just done for them, and is it one of those things that's now yours?
NASA became aware that the Soviets had a cosmonaut training program that made use of psychic functioning. We talked with cosmonaut Vitaly Sevastyanov, and he told about experiences that he had in space where he dropped into a telepathic rapport with his brother cosmonaut so that he could hand his partner objects before they were even needed. And as he became an instructor where programmed failures would occur, he could anticipate the failure before it even showed up on the console. So from talking to Sevastyanov and other researchers in the Soviet Union, it became clear that there's significant interest really at the highest scientific levels in the Soviet Union in psychic functioning and in remote viewing in particular. And as a result of that, many American organizations began to show similar interest.
Well, this mind racer that you have developed, as you call it, the mind racer, and it's a good name for it, it seems to me, is that available or will it be available?
It's not available now. We hope to have it available in the spring.
In the spring.
We have prototypes. The device works. We published a paper for NASA, and we hope to bring it out as a ESP training device, as a game.
It should do better than Rubik's Cube.
Well, we hope so.
Okay. Let's go back to our callers. Hello, you're on with us tonight. What's your name, please?
Good evening. My name is Saeed.
Hello, Saeed.
How are you this evening?
Doing fine. What can we do for you?
Dr. Tarek, I have a question about astral projection.